drawing room over here.
Are you on the list? Oh, doesn't matter. Come on in. Here, have one of these.
Or two. Or three. We are about to travel back in time this evening, all the way to 1955, which is a way back, Malaya. It's about to achieve independence from the British. It will become Malaysia. Now, in a schoolroom in the town of Baling, British officials are hosting a meeting between Malayan leaders, including Chin Peng. He's the leader of the Malayan Communist Party. I wonder what happens next. Well, if you're in Adelaide, you can find out, because this event has become a show. It's called Baling. It's on at Adelaide's Oz Asia Festival, and it takes us right back there using transcripts of the meeting. I wonder how they were put together, telling the story, and it's a significant thing, the founding of a country. Mark Tay is the director, and James is one of the researcher performers, and guess what? They join us now. Mark and welcome.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you. Jonathan. Lovely to be here.
I'm feeling a resonance in this story and all that thing of sort of transcripts and listening in rooms to the current conversations about Timor-Leste and Witness K in this country and sort of the buggings that went on there. How did we come to get a transcript of what happened in that Malayan schoolroom?
Well, actually, it's a really kind of interesting process because, you know, we found these transcripts in a kind of memorial of one of the participants of the talks in Kuala Lumpur, Tunku Abdul Rahman, the man who had become Malaya's first prime minister mm-hmm. in 1957. But basically, these recordings were done by the British. You know, they had monitored the talks and recorded the talks. They had stenographers. And when we found these talks, actually, no one had kind of thought of them for a long time because these Baling talks appeared in our history books, always as just like two photos, you know, of the participants of the talks.
Yep.
And obviously, when we found these talks, they really read like, you know, good drama, you know, debates about nation, loyalty, independence, freedom, who could belong, who was excluded.
Well,
we had to stage it.
Yeah. Let's go back a couple of steps. I mean, Malaya at the time, what was going on? Why were the British brokering these talks? What was the situation?
At that point, we were a colony of the British Empire. And there was agitation for independence, and it was post-war, Second mm-hmm. World War, and as a lot of countries in Asia and Southeast Asia were fighting for independence, including Malaya. Though we didn't have any fights or battles like happened in Vietnam or Indonesia or India, so ours was more negotiated, discussed independence.
Right. This was led by the Nationalist Party, Jonathan.
Yeah. Which,
you know, would eventually inherit independence in 1957. But the kind of resistance in Malaya at the time was led by the communists, who really saw the return of the British after World War II as a kind of continuation of this imperialism, you know, Japanese imperialism, British imperialism. So for them, they've always maintained what we call the Malayan emergency as a kind of anti-colonial revolutionary war.
Malayan emergency British, being a thing in which Australian forces took place, Australian Air Force, for example.
Absolutely. That's right. Yeah. From 1950, I believe, was the first landings. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. The first squadrons landed in Singapore in 1950, mm-hmm. and some of them moved to Butterworth yep. near Penang yep. in 1955.
See, this is the interesting thing. I mean, you know, a nationalist movement, and as this is took place in several countries in that sort of period of nationalist movements being, in the view of many in the colonial powers, fronts for communist insurgency. In the view of the people in the colonized countries, they were nationalist movements with perhaps, you know, a political overtone. How did that fall in Malaya or Malaysia?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's what you've just pointed out is exactly that. It was a really kind of complex time. But I think we should also remember in Southeast Asia and in many parts of the world at this time, it was a really fluid time. You know, parties were being formed and banned and reformed under the guises of lots of different names, precisely to kind of escape the bans and the censorships. So for the Malayan Communist Party, for them, they saw this as a kind of continuation of the struggle to form a truly independent nation. At the same time, the British were choosing to negotiate with some parties which were formed kind of more by like the feudal kind of parties.
I'd say more amenable parties towards the British.
Okay. Yep.
That's right. Who would protect British interests after independence in 57. And so, these parties, of course, remained in power until our, you know, recent elections in 2018.
So the British took independence as a given, but simply wanted to secure, as you say, their interests in that emerging peace.
Absolutely. And they didn't. And I think the Malayan Communist Party has to be seen in the context of what is happening in the world at that time in terms of the Cold War. So the British were on the side of making sure that these countries, like the Americans, did not fall into the hands of the communists. So they did not want to see the Malayan Communist Party as a party that was fighting for independence, but to cast them as more terrorists and enemies.
So what were the Malayan Communist Party's links externally? Were there Russian links? Were there Chinese links?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there were links with both the Russians and the Chinese at earlier stages, particularly, I think, like the 30s and the 40s, you know. But by the 50s, by the time that the Baling talks actually took place, the question of eventual independence was on the table. And, of course, the party had begun to really look at settling down its roots and ideological kind of like standpoint within an independent Malaya. So the party itself was in flux in terms of just trying to think about, you know, what is local and what is regional. And of course, this is something which is a much harder story to tell.
Within the broader international struggle.
Of course.
The global worker, yes.
Yeah, you know, like the Cold War is always told from the perspective of the big kind of like parties of China and Russia. But there's now like a whole move, you know, in the last 15 years maybe, to kind of look at how local forces in Indonesia, in Malaysia, in Vietnam, and so on and so forth were also kind of, if you like, manipulating these currents from larger countries or
that's
larger kind of...
Yes.
Yeah, to stake their own claims, really.
So that's the sort of context in which these talks take place. I mean, take us into that room, put us around that table. Who's there?
Well, there's Tunku Abdul Rahman, who's the chief minister of Malaya at this point in time, and eventually the first prime minister of Malaya. There's David Marshall, who's he's a Singapore-born Jewish man who was the first chief minister of Singapore. Mm-hmm. Many people mistook him for being British, but he was actually a Singaporean. And of course, the secretary general of the Malayan Communist Party, Chin Peng, at that time, the most wanted man in the British Empire with $250,000 kind of price
bounty
on his head.
Yeah. Okay, so with a man in that situation, with a bounty on his head, is involved I was going to say formal talks, but they're not quite that, are they? But he's involved in this high-level negotiation. That's extraordinary.
Absolutely. And I mean, we found, you know, reading these talks again, like already the talks themselves were highly performative in nature. Mm. You know, here was the big bad terrorist coming out of the jungle, you know, emerging from the jungle, so to speak. And of course, the jungle is a place of mysticism in our part of the world, you know, a place of kind of like camouflage and shadows and where like supernatural things potentially could happen.
Okay.
So here's Jinping emerging out of the jungles to meet, you know, two men. One is a kind of leftist lawyer and the other is a kind of prince, you know, who would eventually lead these nations. And of course, recording all this was the British. So for Tunku Abdul Rahman, it was a kind of audition as well, because 2 days after the talks, he would fly to London to discuss independence with the British. So how he was going to handle these talks, how he performed, was really, really kind of important to his discussions in London several weeks later.
So both parties were performing to the world, actually, not just for the nation to be,
right,
but to the world.
And I wonder, in those talks in London, were they informed by what the British had gleaned from this meeting?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, if Tunku Abdulrahman had not come out of the Baling talks with a very clear position on Jinping, if he had made too many concessions to Jinping, if he had recognized the Communist Malayan Party, which remains outlawed till today, then I think the British might have gone with other parties or, you know, other individuals within his party to lead and negotiate independence.
Or taken longer to give independence as a possibility.
What an extraordinary tale. Mark Tay and James are telling us this story of these Baling talks. Why? Because they have transformed this extraordinary moment in regional diplomacy into a dramatic piece for the Oz Asia Festival. And before we get to the detail of that transition, just a lingering point, Jinping, taking an amazing risk.
Yeah, absolutely. He really was, you know, and at that point in time, he was really constructed as this very dangerous ideologue, terrorist.
And also the word communist had a very different resonance at that time. So once you're labeled that, it conjures up all kinds of images of huge bogeys that lurk in the jungles and outside your front door.
Yes.
Waiting to come in.
Yeah. So for us, Jonathan, in Malaysia, I mean, like, you know, until his death, Jinping was never allowed to return to Malaysia when he died in 2013. Even his ashes, because he was cremated, was not allowed to enter the country to kind of pollute it, you know? So this bogey of a man who was never allowed to enter since 1955, as the kind of enemy of the state, is still very pervasive and very powerful in our environment. And for this particular production, the actors kind of step out of the Baling talks to really discuss and kind of think about who was Jinping and what was his role, and to kind of problematize this ghost of our history.
So take us to the form of this show as a piece of theatre. How does this work? How does this all condense into your play?
Right. Yeah, so if over the course of like 100 minutes, you know, what happens is that the audience comes into the theatre and we read from the transcripts of the Baling talks. There are three performers and with Faik Shazwan Kohiri and Imri Nasution. And all three performers take turns to read as Tunku Abdulrahman, Jinping and David Marshall. And they switch these characters each round. So there are three or four rounds of these readings. And in between the readings, this is where we kind of begin to zoom in a little bit on who was Jinping, how was he constructed by the British, how did the kind of hysterical symptoms, basically, that were left over from this time translated after we became independent? You know, how did Jinping grow in stature?
Right.
From that time.
Assume mythological proportion.
That's right.
Yes.
And one of the interesting aspects here is, and this is the case for you, that the performers also researched this piece. That must give you, I mean, tremendous insight.
Yes. We did. I mean, this is the way Mark works. We research our personal journeys in terms of how, well, you know, I was born before the independence of Malaya. We researched our personal journeys and our interactions. Like, my father was a police personnel member, a friend, an uncle was a special branch officer.
Right.
So three of my own family were part of the security forces that probably pursued Jinping. And it's interesting as we walk back into our own personal histories, how that impacts and the stories that are told in our history books. So that juxtaposition of those links are some of the things that come up in our personal stories in relation to the historical narrative.
I mean, I imagine, Mark, as Anne describes there too, that this story has such intimate resonance for so many Malaysian people. I mean, it's interesting for me, considering this as a white Australian, it all fits into that sort of post-colonial amorphism. It's, you know,
sure.
Malaysia's this big lump of a thing that we barely understand.
Right.
And I wonder, you know, is there an understanding among the Malayan people of that history, of these things that took place, of how this current state was created?
Well, you know, that's a really present question actually for us, Jonathan, because, you know, I'm sure some people in Australia would notice we changed our government finally after 61 years earlier this year in March. No, in May, sorry, May 9th.
May 9th.
And so this was the same, you know, coalition that was in power since 57. Yeah. And so next year, we actually have history books which are being revised and updated. So there's already a kind of big debate about what will get included in them, what gets removed from them, what will be disappeared. And of course, will the communists appear in these history books? And that's a really contentious issue.
How they appear.
Yes.
Exactly. In terms of then, you know, that they, because they're cast as people, not as anti-colonialists, they're cast as enemies of the state in the present history books. Hmm. So will that history be reframed is one of the questions that we need to ask as a country.
Yeah. And that'll be a real test of, you know, of maturity and security of that nation state.
Yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's you know, clearly not just a question of the history, but it's also a question, you know, thrown towards the future. I mean, that new unwritten, unedited-ish history book remains in 2019. And, you know, big groups of people are going to sit around tables arguing about what should go in them. And I think our performance, you know, is also one of a kind of like attempts to speak to, you know, the kind of problematizing of what can be included. And how can we begin to re-look back at how states were formed, what motivated them, what were the kind of subtext at work?
Well, all the best for the Adelaide season at Oz Asia. It sounds remarkable and a very complex and deep piece.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us and talking to us.
It's lovely to be here.
Thank you to Mark Tay and to Anne James. And the piece is Barling, and it's on as part of the Oz Asia Festival in Adelaide, running until Friday. That's November 2, so check local guides for details.